Blog Talk Radio.
Show. I'm your host, the Angry Patriot, coming to you live from the Battle Room here in Houston, Texas. It is Valentine's Day morning at 6 a.m., and I am here to do a very special Valentine's Day edition of the Angry Patriot Show. Today's topic will be pretty much asking the question, will peace ever come to Israel? Israel has had, from the very day God led the Jewish people from Egypt, Israel has had to fight war upon war just to live. And even since becoming a nation in 1948, Israel has been attacked repeatedly by many countries, and recently came across a video on Facebook of a young lady attacking today's guest for her efforts on behalf of the Jewish state and the Jewish people. And I had to really kind of weigh in on this matter. So I reached out to today's guest, and I'm honored to have Leora Eisenberg, who is currently a high school student, the Jerusalem Post, and who writes regularly about Judaism, Israel, and anti-Semitism. And in the fall, Leora will be attending Princeton University. So with that, it's an honor and a privilege for me to bring Leora Eisenberg on the show. Good morning, Lior. Welcome to the Angry Patriot Show.
Good morning. Good morning. Happy Valentine's Day.
So I've been following this, and, you know, this is not something new to me. I mean, I've seen it happen time and time again, being that I've been, you know, on this earth for 58 years. And but when I see it across in this magnitude, it's not something that I really enjoy seeing, because I was raised to treat everybody with respect and, you know, courtesy. And I just don't buy into this hatred that I see. But tell me about your efforts and how you got involved in this.
Sure. So I'm 17, just by way of introduction. I come from a split home. My parents are divorced. And my father is actually the one who was always very strongly pro-Israel politics. He's an economist, PhD. So politics, economics were always an ever-present force in our household. Always strongly pro-Israel. We always talked about it. But I guess I never really thought about it until about a year and a half ago when I was living in France. I spent the summer there. I went to university there. And I was living there during Operation Protective Edge, so the last Gaza war. And as many of you, I'm sure, know, that was not a great time to be living in France, particularly if you're Jewish, because I was living in a little town near Geneva called Ancy, and I would walk home, and there would be these enormous protests calling for death to Israel, death to Jews. I mean, it was extremely disturbing, and I think that was the moment at which I became active. I knew that I had to become active. And since I'm a writer. I am a very, very active, prolific writer. I write in the Jewish Press, in the Jerusalem Post, the Allgemeiner, stuff like that. Even when I write about Judaism, I'm in Eshet Torah, which is a very popular Orthodox site, Stellar magazine. But I also, my main platform is social media. I tell people about what is going on in Israel. I also make people aware of anti-Semitism, because people don't realize that it's a problem. Yeah, that is my main work.
Well, it's a problem today as it was back in the early 1900s, when Hitler was just arising on the scene, and then it became even more of a issue when he became the ruler of Germany. But it's been an ongoing issue for centuries, and when I see something come across, like, well, I've got that video up. If you want me to, I could play a little bit of it so the listeners can get an idea of what you're talking about. Okay, let me play this.
Let me just show off this. Yes, free Palestine. There's this girl named Liora Eisenberg. This I am targeting pretty much towards you and people like you. But as I can see you publicly are posting proudly, you should be ashamed. You should be ashamed of yourself, because that's not what America stands for.
You know, that's just a little snippet of that video. I mean, I could go on and on and on, but it gets kind of graphic, so I decided probably better not to play it.
Sure.
But, you know, a lot of people get on here and they talk about, you know, Israel this, Israel that, but they don't realize that when the cameras aren't rolling, the Palestinians and the other anti-Israeli groups out there are very violent, but it's not until the cameras start rolling and capture the Israeli military or Israeli police trying to apprehend the perpetrators of these violent acts that Israel's portrayed as a terrorist state, which all they're trying to do is defend themselves.
Absolutely. And I think one of the main problems now is that these anti-Israel groups, particularly on college campuses, They're violence. I mean, I've heard of physical harassment, but more often than not, it's taunting, emotional harassment. I've been in situations where I felt physically unsafe on campus. I do take part-time classes at the University of Minnesota. I went to a lecture by an Israeli professor once, and there was such a huge crowd that it made national news. I mean, it was so frightening for me. I did not feel safe. I couldn't speak my mind. I couldn't do anything. But now much of this violence, harassment, abuse takes the form of anti-Semitism, where they just equate Zionists with Jews. I mean, that's a whole other conversation. But they do so, and they just blatantly discriminate against Jews, and people say, oh, it doesn't count. They're just being anti-Israel. They're not being anti-Jewish, which I take extreme offense at, because if you're only against Israel, then you are anti-Semitic. If you're only against the Jewish state, and if you only are against Jewish people and do and act like it, then you are anti-Semitic.
Right. I sent an email, well, not an email, but a private message to this lady, and I told her, well, you know, I think you need a little bit of a history lesson on, you know, the PLO and you know, the Hamas and, you know, stuff like that, because I remember years back, and Yasser Arafat was the head of the PLO, and there was a peace treaty offered to him, and they were even willing to give up land if he would accept it. And he blatantly said, no, we're not going to be happy until Israel is all, you know, blotted off the face of the earth. And so, if that's a peaceful type of movement, then I wouldn't want to be any part of it.
Oh, absolutely. I was just reading an article a couple of days ago that said, you know, the two-state solution, and I am pro the two-state solution, but again, that's a topic for another day. The two-state solution in many ways seems a little bit like a farce, because every time that Israel proposes one, somebody screws it up. Somebody says no. Every time that there's a chance for peace, Hamas starts throwing rockets. So there is a belief that the other side will never take a two-state solution, because the radicals, the radical leaders, just want to wipe Israel off the planet. They don't want peace. They just want Israel gone. And I'm not sure how much they subscribe to that view, but it's definitely a valid point.
You know, and the thing that I kind of find ironic is they don't realize how close Israel, you know, and the Jewish people came to being exterminated back in World War II.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why Israel was, you know, pretty much given the status of a nation, because, you know, they felt that, you know, the Jewish people needed to have an identity rather than just be scattered all over the face of the earth. And I kind of was, you know, astounded that the United Nations gave that status, because the United Nations has always been a proponent of, you know, anti-Israel Semitism, you know.
Right. Absolutely.
But, you know, it's not getting any better today. I mean, it's when you have groups that on one hand say we want a peace treaty with Israel, and then on the other hand they turn around and as soon as that peace treaty is signed, they send out troops or individuals to try to cause animosity. To show that, hey, this, see what they're doing? Look, this is what they're doing. But it's not until they turn their cameras on that, you know, the world sees, but the world only sees half the story.
Right. And I think one thing that is particularly detrimental to the real story is that there's this natural affinity for the underdog. We always vote for the person who seems to be smaller, who's taking the losses. It's just a natural human reaction. And to that effect, people are now increasingly anti-Israel, because they see images of, this is really unfortunate, of, you know, Palestinian children or, you know, dead bodies. It's really sad. So Israel looks like this oppressor, particularly after 1967 with the conquering of land. It's a very tenuous situation. And so people tend to side against Israel, because Israel just looks so big and mighty, because they're only seeing half of the story.
because, you know, the thing about Israel, I don't know if anybody's ever really looked at the map of the Middle East, but Israel's pretty much surrounded on three sides, and the other side is, you know, their backs to the ocean. And
right.
So, you know, looking at the whole Middle East situation, when you got countries that are like 20 times the size of Israel, which I think Israel, if you look at it geographically, is only about the size of maybe El Salvador or maybe Nicaragua. You know, it's not very big. When you got Arab nations surrounding you that oppose your religious views and your political views, and there's not much room for you to really move around. And when you reach out to other nations and thinking that, you know, hey, we have an ally, and for the most part, you know, the United States has been, but under the Obama administration, it seems like it's going the other direction. And that's a sad point of view to really touch on, but it's the truth.
I agree with you. I think it's silly to say that the U.S. and Israel are as close as they were to the Bush administration, the Clinton administration. I think that's absolutely true. As Dennis Ross once said, the Israel-U.S. relationship is doomed to succeed. However, I do think that the bonds between U.S. and Israel are very strong. I think that it's impossible for the two countries to be separated, so to speak. But I really do hope that the next president is a true friend of Israel.
Yeah, you know, but the promising part of this whole situation is, it's just like you said, you know, the true unity between Israel and the United States is the people. It's not the government. And I've seen countless of people saying that, you know, they support Israel, you know, and they would never even think of turning their back on Israel. But yet, you know, you still have people that are just so, I'm going to use the terminology, really uneducated on the fact of Israel's history and the things that Israel has done to try to come to a peaceful solution to this situation. And you know, they've even gave, you know, the Palestinian people, you know, their own identity.
Mm-hmm.
They've even said we'd be, you know, to go as far as let you have your own little country within our country. But that's not enough for the Palestinian people.
I think the issue with the Palestinian people is an issue of victimization. And, you know, I feel bad for them because it's not, I think, the people's fault at all. I think it's their stupid leadership's fault think continues to ruin their chances at every turn. I think they themselves are sick of the status quo and want their state already. They want peace. But every time the leadership turns it down or starts sending rockets so that Israel feels that it has to retaliate to for its own self-defense, I feel truly bad. But in this problem, they're stuck with this victimization. I mean, they merit the pity of the world. And I want to say justifiably so. You feel bad for them. But on the other hand, is there anything we can do? I really think there's remarkably little we can do. I mean, the U.S. has been funding UNRWA, United Nations Works and Relief Agency for Palestine Refugees in the Near East. It's its own refugee council for the Palestinians. We've been giving them money for years. And what has come of it? The Palestinian Authority is now publishing textbooks that incite to violence, wipe Israel off a map, and praise the martyr, which is the quote-unquote freedom fighter, a.k.a. suicide bomber. And, you know, Arab countries have kind of pledged themselves to their cause since as long as Israel's been around, and nothing's come of it. So they're stuck, I think, in this, I hesitate to say cycle of violence. I just like the term because then it wipes anyone of any responsibility. But they're really stuck with their horrible leadership that condemned them to live in squalor, I think, for the rest of their lives.
You know, and it's like the situation when I was in Afghanistan as a contractor.
Mm-hmm.
The cycle of violence is pretty much ongoing because, you know, the way the terrorist mindset works is they go to the family of say a newborn child, and they said, "Oh, we noticed you have a newborn son or daughter. Do you want to see your child grow up, or do you want your child to grow up?" And if they say yes, well, you need to do this. You need to strap a bomb to you and go to the checkpoint and blow it up, or we'll give you a truck full of explosives. You drive it into the military base and blow it up.
Right.
And then the person says, "Oh, okay, I can do that because I want my family to live." Then they do that, but at the same time, the terrorists record the whole incident on video. And then when the father blows himself up, a few years later, when the son or daughter gets old enough to really comprehend what's going on, they come to the child and say, "Hey, we want to show you a video. This is what the English or the Americans did to your father."
Right, right.
And then they do that, and then the child says, "Well, I hate those Americans, or I hate the British, or I hate the French, so
right.
I'm going to become part of the, you know, the group that is against them." So that's a whole rotating cycle of violence that never really ends.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm just referring, I think, more, that was my mistake. People say that there's a cycle of violence between Israel and Palestinians, and I really reject that term. I think when you say cycle of violence, it implies that there's equal responsibility on both sides, and certainly there is responsibility on both sides. I don't think it's equal. I think that one side is certainly inciting to violence, and the other one is acting in self-defense. I think there's absolutely no comparison between the two. One is a terrorist state, one is a state acting to preserve its own citizens and its own character and democracy. So when we say cycle of violence, I really resent the term. That said, there can certainly be a silent cycle of violence on for the Palestinian side with Hamas and Fatah and, you know, free, quote unquote, freedom fighters. I think that is, and the government, of course, I think that is an absolute legitimate term.
Yeah, I don't really see any solution to this until they get people within the Hamas organization that are open-minded enough to say, "Hey, it's time for us to put our differences aside and work together in true peace," because without that, as long as you have people that are so adamantly wanting to see Israel wiped off the face of the earth, to use that terminology, you're never going to really have any bona fide productivity in the negotiations.
Oh, absolutely. With regard to your first comment about not seeing a solution, I agree, and I don't think I can be of any help in that regard, because it's not even narcissistic to think that I know anything else, that I can offer any solution that hasn't already been proposed. But I do agree, until Hamas puts forth some bona fide negotiators, people who, you know, go against the Hamas charter, go against the current, and don't want to see Israel wipe off the earth, we'll never have peace. We need to have a negotiator, a team, someone who comes forth to Israel that is ready to compromise. I think the essence of this is compromise. Arafat didn't want to compromise. There was no peace. They didn't get their own state.
Right. Leora, I'm going to take a little bit of a break here. I'm going to try to get some people to call in. If there's anybody out there that's wanting to call in on today's show and speak to Leora, the telephone number here is 646-668-2932. I'll be back momentarily to continue more on the Angry Patriot Show.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Angry Patriot Show. I'm your host, Angry Patriot, here on a very special Valentine's Day edition. And today's guest is Leora Eisenberg. So, Leora, what's your hope in what you're trying to do on campuses as well as your high school in regards to stopping anti-Semitism?
Sure. So my high school is actually pretty small. My class is about 36 people. So they're all, I think, Zionists, at least by virtue of associating with me. Nothing I can do there. But my school is very, very, very small. I think there's definitely a very pro-Israel current there. That said, my school, my university, that is, I will be a camera fellow, a committee for advocacy in Middle East reporting in America. So I will be writing op-eds, a lot of op-eds, to correct misinformation and biases regarding Israel. I also hope to kind of, I've written a lot about this, change the style of Israel advocacy and activism. I think that most campuses are obsessed with this idea of advocacy, and it seems so very corporate. The word advocate already means lawyer in many situations. So people reject the term outright. It looks very stuffy, business-like. Like I said, corporate, but the other side, I think using the term the other side, but they call themselves human rights activists. As a result, they're very accessible, grassroots, they appeal to the population, to populace. And I think when I'm on campus, I will start doing that, making it so much more accessible. Human rights focused, we're activists, we're not advocates, we are here to protect the rights, and then people block to
it.
Great.
So is there a website that people can access to maybe support your movement?
Sure. So you can to support my movement, to support me and my work, you can. The best way to find me is on Facebook. I'm very, 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 very active, except for on Shabbat. I'm not on the electronics on Shabbat. But you can find me at Leora Noor Eisenberg. My first name is L-E-O-R-A, middle name N-O-O-R, last name Eisenberg, just like Heisenberg, but without the H, E-I-S-E-N-B-E-R-G.
Now, I noticed earlier when we were talking, you were telling me about your time in France when you were in a certain city, and you were told that, you know, people might think of you as being Jewish. Well, you know, I noticed your last name, Eisenberg. That's pretty much right down the line of it being a Jewish name. Am I correct?
Oh, yeah. Eisenberg is pretty Jewish.
So that would be kind of hard to kind of, you know, kind of hide as far as your name. But and that's meant with all the respect that you're entitled to, because I see what you're doing as being very respectful. And I commend you for that.
Thank you. Regarding my name, yeah, I have a hard time hiding as Jewish. My name is Leora Eisenberg. It's like having a name like Pinchas Zuckerman. Gives it away pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah. You know, the thing about the history of the Jewish people, too, is I remember, you know, back a few years ago, I was watching a movie. I forget what the name and title of the movie was, but anyway, it took place in I think it was either Spain or Portugal. The Spanish Inquisition was pretty much in its peak, and the people of the Jewish faith were, you know, being persecuted because they wouldn't convert to Catholicism. And so a lot of the people that were of the Jewish ancestry were changing their names to like Rodriguez or Hernandez or something, mm-hmm. so that they wouldn't be discovered. And even with that, mm-hmm. though, you know, it wasn't working. But that shows you how long the persecution has been going on.
Oh, yeah, it's been going on even, I mean, obviously far before that. Is this the Jewish year 5776? I think, yeah, 5776. 577, yeah. And it's been going on those whole 5,776 years.
Yes.
It's been going on that whole time.
you know, but
it's one of many.
Yes, but it's with people like you that, you know, gives some semblance of hope. But you know, I'm someone that reads the Bible a lot, and what I see happening, though, it's not just going to be getting worse. It's actually going to spread to the Christians and other religions as well. What's your take on that? Do you buy into what the Bible says about end time prophecies and stuff?
I go back and forth. As a religious individual, I struggle with this. You touched something very personal for me. I keep as many commandments as I can that said I don't take everything in there as literal. I see many of them as parables or stories to learn from. So I'm not sure how much I buy end times prophecies. That said, I have a lot of family that is more religious than I am, and they prove to me every time that everything's happening according to what is written. So I kind of vacillate. I don't have a solid answer for you on that.
Right. My advice to anyone, though, is when you read the Bible, and it's just like any other religious thing, you got to look at everything metaphorically and really kind of dissect it, because that's what turns a lot of people off about reading the Bible, is they look at it and they take everything for what it says, like when the dragon comes out of the ocean, you know, this and that. Oh, you know, dragon's going to come out? No, that's not. They're just using the dragon as a metaphor for,
right,
you know, Satan and all this, you know, it's,
right.
But you know, that's what, you know, turns a lot of people off about religion, because they think it's all, pretty much scripted, but it's been like that for thousands of years. But it's like someone's interpretation is what going with that.
Right. I think go ahead.
So if you could have any ideal solution come out of this, what would it be, and how would you think we could get to that point?
Just for anti-Semitism, or for Israel, or for campus situation?
For pretty much the whole situation in general.
Sure. Again, like I said before, I think it's kind of narcissistic to think that I have an idea that has been already said. Regarding, or kind of address this a little bit, point by point, I think for campus situation, campus life, the best way to change our MO, if we continue to call ourselves advocates, the world will see us as advocates and will spurn us, especially, you know, left-leaning college kids with an affinity for socialism. I don't think they'll like that. I think we have to change that. Portray Israel less as the oppressor, more, I think, as the underdog. Not that Israel is the underdog, but show Israel in a different light than the media shows, absolutely. That will get rid of a lot of, I think, the Israel problems on campus. I mean, gradually, slowly, I think it sounds like it will happen in Spain, which is obviously silly to think. Regarding peace in the Middle East, he's talking to the wrong girl. I think there is a notion that certainly exists among many, particularly among the neoconservative right, among people like Pukharis and Feist, that any attempt at negotiation is futile. And while I see the point, it's never worked out before, I think we need to find a new negotiation partner. And once that happens, maybe we could do that. The notion that we can continuously reject peace is not doing anything for us. And then anti-Semitism in general, that's the trickiest one of all, because as history has taught us our lesson, nothing we do can make it any better. That said, I think people have no idea that it even exists. So I will continue, and I encourage everyone else to show people the fact that 52.4% of hate, religiously motivated hate crimes in the United States are against Jews. That is more than half and more than obviously any other religion. That, you know, 40% of Jews in France are considering leaving, that the last Jews were kicked out of Aleppo, that the last Jews in Yemen are being forced to convert. I mean, show people the facts, because they don't realize that anti-Semitism exists.
Right. I noticed on your Facebook page, you have a picture of a gentleman with you that looks Palestinian or Middle Eastern. Is that correct?
Possibly. Oh, it depends on the photo, but I think I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah, the one with the Jewish flag in the back?
Yeah, that's a good friend of mine.
Tell me about that. Tell me, because, you know, when I see stuff like that, that gives me more hope, because, you know, like-minded people of different, you know, different races, different ideals, you know, that's a building stone on, you know, putting together something that could affect the future for both, you know, the Jewish people and the Palestinians.
Right. That's a very good friend of mine. His name is Hussein. And he recently, when I was speaking to him with a pro-Israel group, I just want to pay the respect. He is Egyptian, and he was in his teens, I think, when he started learning about Israel, and he came to see the truth, and now he's actually a Hebrew teacher. He speaks totally fluent Hebrew, totally fluent English, obviously totally fluent Arabic. He's a really incredible guy. I went to a lecture of his a couple months ago, and every time I see him or talk to him, I'm continually inspired by his devotion to truth, his commitment to Israel. It's really incredible.
You know, because in the future, I wouldn't mind having both of you on the show if I could get that put together. That would be a great platform to really maybe get the word out, you know, both
sure.
to the Jewish people and the Palestinians and the Arabic people out there that, you know, there's hope for, you know, peace if we can just get to that point.
Sure. I'll talk to him. I'll see what he thinks.
And maybe we can put together a forum and maybe, to be honest with you, maybe get this Heather girl to come on and maybe develop some type of, I'm hoping, you know, I'm just reaching out here. Maybe we can get some understanding that, hey, you know, you've been taught the wrong way. This is not really what's happening. You're just getting their side and without seeing the other side of the issue.
Right.
You know, because I've always been taught there's two sides to every story, and you can't make a decision until you hear both sides. But from what I heard from her, it's all negative, and she hasn't really done her research. That's my point.
Yeah, absolutely. She hasn't done research, and I think that she wants to feel the self-righteousness of being attached to a cause, one that she knows remarkably little about, and has done so. She can feel great about herself now.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, to me, the only thing I got from her side of the video was somebody that doesn't really want to give somebody a chance to explain the whole story. They just hearing, well, you know, you're saying you're for, you know, Israel, but have you seen what Israel's been doing? Yes, I've seen what Israel's been doing, but why are they doing it?
Right.
And,
I mean,
you know, there's, yes, that's the whole thing. I mean, anybody that's pushed into a corner, they're going to come out and defend themselves. I mean, that's a common part of human nature. I mean,
right.
if you corner a wild animal and the wild animal has no way of getting out, what do you think that animal is going to do? It's going to do whatever it has to survive.
Right. No, absolutely. And people don't realize that. People think that Israel is an aggressor, that Israel is this, that. No, absolutely. Israel has made mistakes, as in Lebanon in 82, but Israel almost always acts out of self-defense.
You know, there was a time when Israel did something. This has been back in, I think, the 60s or maybe even sooner than that. You know, they did something to the United States, but, you know, it was an accident. It wasn't something that they intended to have happen, you know, but people put that behind them. You know, they see what Israel's trying to do, and they need to support that.
Right. I think you're referring to the Suez Canal crisis. I think it was in 1957.
Yeah, I believe that was it, yes.
Yeah, there you go.
And, you know, they... but, you know, I, you know, from talking to you here, I see someone that I think could be a very strong part in what Israel and the Palestinians need. If we can find more people on the other side that think pretty much down the same line as you do, you know, there might be some hope.
I think there is hope. I think once we lose hope, we lose hope, we stop trying. And I think if we stop trying, then we are stuck in a cycle of violence on both sides, as much as I hate the word. And I think I'm, you know, I'm 17 and I'm full of this youthful naivete, optimism, narcissism. And I say, oh, we can never give up hope. And in a way, I think it's good. I think it's very good to think like that, even as much as adults may roll their eyes.
Right.
I'm not giving up hope because I think that I have something to show the world. I have something to offer to people. And it happens more often than you would think that someone tells me, oh, Leora, thanks for showing me the truth about Israel. Oh, Leora, you just gained yourself a new support of Israel. If I were an adult, if I were someone who stopped believing in any prospect of peace or prospect of hope, then it wouldn't happen.
You know, because like you said, the moment you give up hope, that's it. It's done. Put a fork in it.
Absolutely.
Well, Leora, I do appreciate you taking the time to come on today's program. I really feel you've made some valid points today, and I'm hoping that the listeners out there really take something from this and go out and try to make something positive happen, because, you know, we as a people need to be unifying instead of dividing each other.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was such a pleasure to be on today.
Yeah, I appreciate you taking the time to do that, and I look forward to doing another show with you in the near future. If you can reach out to your friend and have them come on, I'd very much appreciate it.
Sure, I will do so.
And Leora, have a good Valentine's Day. Enjoy it.
You too. Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming on.
Right. Be well.
Well, thank you, Leora Eisenberg, for being a part of today's program. I really and truly believe that the efforts of Leora Eisenberg are needed in this world today, because we have so much going on. We have Black Lives Matter causing division in the American theater. We have anti-Semitism being perpetrated in not just in the United States, around the world. And that's something that we need to stop. We need to correct. We need to show that it's wrong. Because everyone on this planet has the right to survive. Everyone has the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, if I can use the constitutional metaphor. And I really and truly believe that with youth such as Leora and others out there trying to put forth a good effort, an effort that I feel can snowball and become more and more of what we need, there's hope. There's always hope. So, folks, I'm going to take another quick little break, and I'll be back to conclude today's special Valentine's Day edition of the Angry Patriot Show. I dare not live in back to the Angry Patriot Show. I'm your host, the Angry Patriot, coming to you on this special Valentine's Day broadcast. We had a very special guest on today's program, Leora Eisenberg. And Leora, if you're still listening to this program, I thank you for taking the time to come on very early to be a part of this program and to share with the audience that what you are doing in regards to trying to improve relations with the Jewish community and the world. I will surely send you a link to today's program as well as my show, and I hope that in the future you will become more of a vital part of it as far as future programs, but I will definitely get it out there to you. So, folks, there's other situations out there that I would like to bring you up to date on. There's a individual out there, as well as various other groups, that are trying to put together a special flag wave memorial for Lavoy Finicum, which is the American patriot who was recently, I'm going to go ahead and say it, was recently murdered by the federal government for his stand for our Constitution. And I'm going to share some dates with you, and I urge you to attend these events because they are vital to keep the memory of Lavoy Finicum and the fight for our Second Amendment rights as well as our constitutional rights alive. On February the 26th, at from 2 to 6 p.m., there's a special flag wave memorial for Lavoy Finicum at 300 West Congress in Tucson, Arizona. On May the 4th, 405 West Congress in Tucson, in the afternoon, they will be holding a another special event. Let's see, where is it at? And I believe it's going to be pretty much in the same general area. Yeah, so it's probably within a block of the other. But it's at 405 West Congress in Tucson in the afternoon. And then on February the 26th, they will pretty much, I'm trying to read the exact things here. Oh, I believe that's the first event that I was saying. But then on March the 4th, and this is at the courthouse, they are holding a, or they're trying to put together an event where they're wanting to, working to get a people's grand jury together in South Arizona, Colorado, Michigan, and Florida, to join together in a flag-waving rally to promote the memory of Lavoy Finicum and the Constitution. We all need to stand up for that. And if I get any more information on this, I'll be sure to pass it along on future shows when I can get a more concrete date and time set. Folks, we're down to the last 5 minutes of today's program. And I would like for you to indulge me for a second. You and your family mean a lot to you, as does my family mean a lot to me. And the future of our nation is at stake here. I feel that we as a nation and people are facing some very tough decisions in the next few months, decisions that will impact our nation for 4 years to come. Do we continue business as usual in this country? Do we continue to allow our elected officials to pretty much go to Washington and do whatever they want? I say it's time that we, as a nation and people, rise up and demand of our elected officials that they keep the promises that they make to the American citizens. In other words, sign a contract that if they fail to keep their oath of office, if they fail to uphold our constitutional rights, that they be immediately removed from office. No questions asked. Because I guarantee you, if you're an employee of a company and you fail to do your job, if you violate a company policy, what do you think will happen to you? I guarantee you, I tell you what's going to happen. They are going to terminate you. And they will either tell you to leave or escort you out, depending on the magnitude of your transgression. So why is it that our elected officials, can continue to violate their oath of office and to pretty much betray the American people and go unchecked? When they violate their oath of office, they need to be immediately removed from office. No questions asked. No reason other than giving them the reason for them being terminated be given. That's my thoughts as the Angry Patriot on this special edition of Valentine's Day of the Angry Patriot Show. I again want to thank today's guest, Leora Eisenberg, for coming on. I want to thank each and every one of you for taking the time to listen. And in closing, God bless you. God bless our troops overseas in harm's way. And may God bless America. Thank you. And have a good day.